Hi, and welcome to The Art of Relating, installment number 4. This is Zach Schwartz, your host. Remember, I'm a psychologist, but I don't do psychotherapy or counseling on the radio. We're just learning a system together of interactive skills, something I call effective humanistic interaction. So please write in email questions to Zach at kepw.org, and I will answer what I can on the air next week. Today, as I promised, I'm going to get back to nuts and bolts. Last week, we talked about light and souls, and I did get one question, which was what you were talking about with light and souls, was that religion? And clearly, to me, it is not religion. This is a perspective on the truth, and there's many ways to see the truth, and the skills we're teaching will work whether you see things that way or not. But we are going to teach empathy and caring and having three-chip interactions, which we already talked about. And if you can learn to be conscious of both your ego, your flesh and bone, your mind and body, and your soul, which I call that, is the light that you're made of, which is also aware, you can instantly have all those things. It's like being that. If I'm walking up to do an intervention with someone, say at the country fair, on the way to that intervention, I am grounding. And remember, we spent a show on grounding. It was installment number 2. And part of my grounding is unhooking, and part of my unhooking is becoming that awareness in me, which is the light. So by the time I get on scene to do the intervention, I'm already feeling peaceful and centered and caring and empathetic and validating and considerate. It all comes from being that. So hopefully some of you are practicing being that in as many moments of your day as possible. But like I say, today is for getting back to nuts and bolts. So no matter what your vehicle, what religion, what spiritual group, what practice you do to see and feel these things and gain this skill and this state of being, totally open. Follow any way you wish. I certainly believe in freedom of religion, and anything that helps you see those things is a good thing to put in your life. So, today's show is about anger. Anger is extremely common in interactions. It's often unpleasant. But every single being, every single ego, has a sword that they're born with. They have the capacity to get angry. If I was writing an Asian character for, like the I Ching, for anger, I would write protect by attacking, because that's what anger is. It's your fight reaction. People naturally shy away from anger because anger is by its nature an attack, and we tend naturally to move away from the danger of the attack. So even counselors and people studying martial arts tend to shy away in this manner. So it takes some practice to go toward. Like I was in an Aikido class, and the instructor swing a bamboo stick at our head to practice. And what he wanted us to do was move in. But of course, when he comes at me with the bamboo stick, I tend to shrink back and put my hands up, which is the opposite of what he wants me to do. But God, I must have tried that 50 times before I could consistently step in and move past that attack without backing up, which made me more vulnerable. I was in a counseling workshop, and we were practicing noticing and reflecting the feelings of the person we were talking to in a role play. And 95% of the counselors, and there must have been 150 of us there, named all the emotions in the role play except for the anger. People tend to stay away from it. See, again, vulnerability pulls us toward each other in a supportive way. Anger tends to make us shy away or not deal or protect ourselves. When I do groups or workshops, I will say to the group on anger management, for example, I'll say, what is anger? And even if it's a group of interactive professionals, counselors, psychologists, I often get blank stares when I ask a question like that. But eventually, someone says, anger is a feeling? Well, yeah. Or anger is an emotion? I say, very good. It's the first thing I want you to understand about anger is that it's an emotion. So I say, what's an emotion? Again, I get blank stares. So, a feeling? Well, try this definition out. An emotion is a state of being that I find myself in. I don't choose it. That's my reaction to whatever I'm paying attention to. Causes my mind and my body to be in a certain state. And we give that state a label, and that's an emotion word. If, say, my dog dies, that's bad, but I have one that's really old right now. And I might feel sad. I don't choose to feel sad. It just happens. It's a state of being. Every emotion tells me something about my experience and also gives me energy to interact with it. So the message generally of sadness is, for example, I've lost something I care about. That's what the sadness tells me. The energy of sadness is to grieve. Put up pictures, tell stories, cry, bury the dog, whatever I have to do to work through the experience, that's what the energy I've created is for. It just happens. Think about fear. Suppose there's a bear coming through the window into the recording studio. Well, I would get afraid. I don't choose to get afraid. It's not my fault I'm afraid. I'm just afraid. That's a state of being I'd be in if I saw the bear. The fear tells me, warning, warning, danger, danger. Warning, Will Robinson, danger, danger. The energy of fear is to run, to get out the door or through the window or away from the danger. Anxiety, by the way, is very similar to fear, except that there's no bear. So I don't know which way to run. So a lot of that energy is harder to use because I don't have an object. In fact, some define fear as anxiety, as fear without an object. Anyway, anger. If I get angry, what's the message of anger? And the message of anger, I would say, is protect. And the energy of anger is to attack. So protect by attacking. That's what anger is about. Like I say, it's my fight reaction. If I don't run from the bear, instead jump on it and try and grab onto it, my anger might help me be able to do that, although it sounds kind of like a dumb move, but I could try. Anger doesn't mean I'm going to win, but anger is my fight reaction. So the operative question of all of anger management really, I think, comes down to how am I going to protect myself if I keep the sword in the holster? I'm managing my anger. So anger is my protection. Anger's an emotion. What else about anger? Well, anger is always the second thing I feel. Nothing that you may do or say can make me primarily angry. But a lot of things that you do or say could make me vulnerable. And it's the energy of vulnerability that powers the anger. So anger is a secondary emotion. The situation makes me vulnerable. The vulnerability makes me angry. So anytime I'm angry, and one of the homeworks from this can be to notice when you're angry or anybody else is angry, and I usually recommend step back and ground, safety first, and when you get grounded, ask yourself, what is the vulnerability behind this anger? Because when I understand that, then I know a big piece of what do I have to protect myself from. And I can also care more. When someone's angry at you, they're waving your sword in your direction. And there's lots of ways. There's lots of different swords. There's lots of different expressions of anger. Some are active. Some are passive. Some are physical. Some are verbal. There's a zillion ways, and each person has their own style of attacking to protect themselves. But if I can recognize the vulnerability behind the anger, what that does is give me the potential to share nurturing with the other person. Of course, I've safety first, got to protect myself from the sword that's pointed at me, and I need some skills for that. But also, I want to notice the vulnerability and be able to respond and negotiate with that in the other person. So what are vulnerable feelings? Well, there's lots of those. You may be hurt. You may be threatened. You may be trapped. You may be unrespected or not listened to or not cared about. Any one of those kinds of feelings and more can be the kind of vulnerability that then triggers anger. So a few years ago, I was standing out at the country fair where I'm one of the managers under Fair Central, which is the Center for Communications, and on the path, and I'm wearing a radio so they can talk to me. And I hear on the radio, anybody in the vicinity of Fair Central, there's a large, angry, violent person running your way, and security is in pursuit. And if you could intervene, we need a manager on the scene. Well, I was standing under Fair Central, so I said, darn. And then I said, okay, it's me, I'm here. And they said, okay, Zach, you got it. And then I look up the path, and I see the man running toward me from down the path, and he's very upset. And behind him, kind of like the Keystone Cops, I see like 6 or 10 security people zigzagging with him through the crowd, trying to catch up. And as he's running toward me, besides grounding and finding the light in me, as I automatically would, I noticed that I'm trying to identify his vulnerability. And I feel that he's embarrassed, that he's threatened, that he's trapped, that he's being chased. These are all vulnerabilities, and I feel that, and I feel this caring for him, not because of his anger and not because he hasn't done anything wrong, but because he's having all those vulnerable feelings. And so by the time he got to me, I was like, oh, you must feel so vulnerable right now, with my body, with my expression, with my words. All of that came out of me. And so when he got to me, he sort of melted into my arms and started crying. And you know, they said he was a large, threatening guy. And this guy was, you know, only 19 or 20, and he was tall and thin, but that didn't matter. So now, through that sharing of that, and through the understanding of that vulnerability, that's what we're talking about. And he responded to that in his own loving and vulnerable way. And really, the whole incident came down to he was being kicked out as public at the end of the day, and he grew up at the fair and he really wanted to stay. And we had a talk about how he could get reinvolved as an adult volunteer and how he could stay overnight if he had a job. And we worked on ways he could problem solve that as I walked him to the bus, caring, and that got resolved without any violence, without triggering his anger. If I had responded to the anger, then we might have gotten ourselves into a mutual escalation, which would have made everything worse. And in a moment, instead of me taking care of him, we could have been wrestling him to the ground, turning him over to the sheriff, getting him arrested for violence or trespass or whatever. But we don't want to go there. We want to relate. So when I ask people, when they take anger management with me, I ask them to, as a homework, start noticing the vulnerability in yourself and in others, because trading that is more effective and nicer and more useful and less violent than just responding to the anger. Notice, if you pull out a sword and point it at me, and that's what I notice, I don't have much choice but to pull my own sword or shield out, which may involve running away, it may involve fighting back, but we're having this interactive escalation, each trying to defend ourselves and each getting more threatened and each upping the ante from there. And that can get dangerous and unpleasant and not where we want to go. But if I respond to the vulnerability, when I was had little kids and I was a young dad, We used to read a book called The Tawny Scrawny Lion about a lion who was mean and grumpy and threatening everybody and was scary. And as it turned out later in the story, a mouse comes along, and a mouse notices that the lion has a thorn in his paw. And the mouse pulls the thorn out, and the lion sits down and goes, "Oh, thank you." So it's not that he was essentially a mean, angry animal. It was more that his toe hurt. And with the thorn in his paw, he was grumpy and he was edgy. And the mouse responded to the vulnerability, which immediately helped the lion get grounded and friendly. And that was the gist of the story. So this is powerful stuff. When we teach anger management, we teach impulse control, which is what most of you would think of if you were inventing a class in anger management. And I did come up with an impulse control model, and it's good behavioral training, and it helps people not to react impulsively, to catch the angry energy early in the process, and to step back, take space, get grounded, get clear, not let the anger determine my next behavior. And that takes some training and some practice, and that's what you'd think would be the meat of an anger management program. But it's not enough, because the question that comes up, if you keep the sword in the holster, is how am I going to protect myself? How am I going to resolve this vulnerability without the sword? I can't just leave myself defenseless or hurt or frightened. I have to have some way to respond in a manner that resolves my vulnerability and keeps me safe, because that's what the sword was meant to do. So I moved to the second part of an anger management curriculum, which is about personal power, healthy assertion. How do I negotiate or set limits in a way that is both assertive and considerate? And remember, last week we said a healthy relationship balances assertion and consideration. And how do I balance those things and take care of myself so I can resolve these vulnerabilities? Over the next few weeks, we're going to do installments of To the Art of Relating that go into detail on all these things. The last part of an anger management curriculum, I think, after impulse control and after healthy assertion, is relationship skills. How do I set up my relationships with people, interact, communicate, negotiate, so that I don't find myself in as many vulnerable situations and I don't get triggered as much? So to feel angry is natural and practically universal. We can all get there sometimes. That's not my fault, and it's not my responsibility to make myself not get angry. That'll just happen. It's spontaneous and automatic. I am, however, accountable for my behavior. So there's a way to get through all this without blaming, without making anybody the bad guy. And I can learn to be accountable for whatever my anger produces. So if I get so mad that I say, throw this chair I'm sitting in out the window and break the window, that's me losing my temper. It's not my fault that that happened, and I'm not necessarily responsible. In fact, I'd rather say at that moment I threw the chair that I was irresponsible, and it's hard to be responsible and irresponsible at the same time. I am, however, accountable, because that's the best our system can presently do. So I'm going to have to pay for the window or the broken chair. I'm going to get arrested and pay a fine or medical bills if I hurt somebody. And I'm not arguing against that happening. Accountability is important, and we have to take care as part of resolving what our body does, how my body acts, I'm accountable for. But that's a completely different thing than blame or shame or guilt. I want to learn to be more responsible, to stay grounded, to when I'm grounded or centered, I wouldn't throw a chair through the window. I didn't throw it because I thought it was a good idea. I didn't throw it because I think I have the right to throw chairs or endanger people or destroy property. I did it because I lost my temper. And losing my temper means losing my ability at that moment to choose. Remember, we said things that I do impulsively are not free will choices. Like I said, if I'm grounded, I'm not throwing the chair. So remember, if I step on your foot and you scream at me, I'm likely, that's like pulling your sword out, to respond to the screaming. But if I step on your foot and you say, ow, then I tend to say, what's the matter? Well, you stepped on my foot and my foot hurts. Well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hurt you. See, the interaction becomes an interaction of mutual nurturing and understanding and resolution and not a sword fight, so to speak. I hope that most of us are motivated to evolve reality into a peaceful, nonviolent situation. And that, of course, is served by me learning to manage my own anger, stay grounded, be nonviolent, not act out of impulse, and certainly not act in a way that pushes anyone else's defensive buttons. But just as important as that I learn to manage my own emotions so that I don't act out violently, I also have to learn to assert myself and protect myself in a way that lends itself to the people around me also managing their own violence. Now, one of your biggest tools in that kind of assertion is what I call the right to space, which is one of the five interactive rights in this training. And the right to space says that you have the right to pause an interaction whenever you want without justification, as long as it's not life or death. I mean, if I'm holding a hand over your broken artery, I may not let go because you want space, you know, something extreme like that. But normally, most of the time, if somebody wants space, they get it. If I go to do an intervention, say, and the person says, I don't want to talk right now, I will back up and ground myself and wait. And usually I have the minutes to do that. Give them that space to calm down. If you feel like someone's being aggressive with you, and the person who determines that is you, you feel like they're being aggressive with you, you have the right to call time, to say, leave me alone for a second, or what I call neutral corners. If you use a boxing metaphor, I'm calling time. I'm going to go over to the corner. I'm going to use the towel. I'm going to ground myself. I'm going to drink some water, whatever. Don't follow me over there and keep hitting me. So you should have that space, and you should grant that space when someone asks for it. Remember that taking space is not a way to avoid resolving a situation. It carries the obligation of coming back in a reasonable amount of time to speak and listen and work toward a resolution with the other person. So if someone I'm intervening with wants space, they get it. But it doesn't end the interaction. We can't end the interaction until we both feel like things are resolved, and that requires coming back and reconnecting. And incidentally, the first thing you might ask when you come back from taking space is, are we both grounded enough to continue? Because ground comes first. Remember, ground, then process, then content. So a quality life, I think, follows those priorities. So when you come back, are we both grounded? If not, take a little more space. It's okay. And usually, depending on the situation or the content, you have that to give. If I remember approaching a person one day, and I came up and said, with all the light and ground and good stuff I could bring, I said, hi, I'm Zach. How you doing? And the other person growled at me, you know, are you going to make a problem for me? And I said, hold on a second. I said, I didn't say anything about making a problem for you. Look, let me walk a few steps away and I'll come back and we'll try it again. And listen to my words, if you can. So I walked away and I came back. Hi. We can care about each other and fix this. My name's Zach. How you doing? And he immediately changed his tone and said, "One step at a time, slow down. Hi, you know, I'm Tom." And I said, "Good, we're talking." And we were able to move forward from there in a way that was peaceful. So remember, practice your grounding. And also remember, notice people's vulnerability. I will say every time that yourself or someone else is getting angry, there's a vulnerability behind it. Even if it's just their blood sugar's low or they're hungry, those are vulnerabilities too. If you notice what the vulnerability is, it's relatively easy to design a solution that will address that vulnerability, which makes the anger unnecessary. And when it's unnecessary, it tends to dissipate or going away. So one last piece about this short presentation on anger, we will do more with it later, is in my experience of working with anger, which I've done for many years, the vulnerability that causes anger the quickest, I mean, life and death threat could also do it, but the one I notice the most causes it the fastest is the vulnerability that I call trapped. I like to say trapped animals bite. You know, if I put a mouse in the corner when I was a kid and don't let it out and don't let it out, my mother would say, "The mouse is going to bite you because you're not giving it any choice. And there's no food in the corner and there's no water in the corner. And it knows, any animal does, that it has to get out of there to survive." Well, that can trigger a lot of anger. I remember doing a workshop once and I had guys working on anger. And I had them line up in pairs and I had one member, making believe they were roommates, trap the other one and insist on a conversation. And I can't tell you, a minute into that exercise, it was just a role play, we had to break up fights. It got elevated and escalated with anger so quickly that it was hard to believe how fast that happened. So we like to say in any interaction or intervention, don't trap anybody if you can possibly help it. If I need to resolve a situation with someone in an intervention, I'd like to present a menu. Here are your choices. There's several ways this can go. It's entirely up to you to pick one. I can do A with you. We can do B. We can do C. If you want to get outside that list, that's also possible, but I may have to check with my compatriots to see what we can do. But I can do A, B, or C with you. If you give those kinds of choices, the person doesn't feel trapped. Leave them safe exits. Respect their right to space. They can walk away from you anytime they want. You don't want to trap them physically. You don't want to trap them with ideas. If you say, you have to do one thing and you have to do it now, that sort of pressure, that sort of corner you've just built is going to cause a trapped feeling in the other person, which is going to probably escalate their anger pretty quickly. So always give choices. Don't trap anyone or yourself if you can help it in an interaction. Now remember, write in with questions to zach@kepw.org and I will answer what I can. And keep practicing grounding and finding the light in you if possible. I'll be back next week to talk about empathy and the next piece of concepts and skills in the art of relating. So have a great week and remember the three chips. Have fun, respect each other, assertion and consideration. Oh, and please remember to visit the website at DynSkills, DynSkills.com. For books, trainings, more information, and podcasts of previous broadcasts so we can talk more frequently and I can share more information with you about this subject if you so choose. And I will speak with you all very soon.